It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
The Michigan football team won the Big Ten Championship and qualified for the playoff for the third straight year. We recap the shutout over Iowa in Indianapolis and look ahead to the Rose Bowl matchup with Alabama coming up on Wolverine Confidential. Guys, good to be with you here Monday morning, December 4th, on the heels of Michigan's Big Ten Championship victory over Iowa, 26-0. Michigan now 13-0. They're the top seed in the playoff rankings in the AP poll. They're headed to the playoff, the Rose Bowl against Alabama. We'll talk about all that. But let's talk about the game first on Saturday night in Indianapolis. It went pretty close to how we thought. We can't say it went exactly how as we thought, since we, you know, we do make score predictions for this game, and you know, it's a little bit different than we had, I guess. Yeah, how did this game go like you thought it would? What were maybe some of the things that were different, and just kind of overall impressions of Michigan's performance?
Well, the Iowa offense showed up or failed to show up. I figured they'd get some points, maybe a field goal or like a garbage time touchdown. I think I had 3 points in my prediction, but they couldn't do anything. So it was pretty remarkable to watch. And we talked about this, I think, last week leading up to the game, just how impressive it was that Iowa got to this point, given how bad their offense was. And you know, it had me, you know, at the end of the game, it reminded me, like, it was impressive. They were able to win 10 games, they couldn't move the football. And I know this wasn't Cade McNamara quarterback. I know they were missing a couple of their top tight ends, but man, it's like, I don't know. It's bad. And look, credit to Michigan's defense, right? They do have one of the best defenses in the country. So there is something to say there, but it just, I don't know. It just, their offense was atrocious to watch.
I don't know about you guys, but I had a pretty nice nap on with my eyes open on Saturday night at Lucas Oil Stadium. You know, at least it felt like that. I mean, it was you just knew there wasn't going to be much offense, either, especially when Iowa had the ball. It's like even when that poor punt by Tommy Doman and they started with possession in Michigan territory, it's like, oh, where are they actually going to drive 38 yards to score a touchdown? And of course they didn't. They fumbled and on a great hit by Mikey Sanders still, and that was their best scoring opportunity all game. And yeah, it was pretty atrocious to watch. Impressive by the Michigan defense, but again, how much stock can you put into that? Because really every defense that Iowa has played has contained them for the most part this year.
Yeah, and you know, Michigan's defense obviously had a lot to do with that. Mikey Sanders still the MVP of this game, unanimous vote from the M Live trio here for that award. I think there's a lot to like, you know, from Michigan's defense in this game. Are there any concerns about the offense now? Yeah, heading into, you know, the playoffs with, you know, a few somewhat shaky or at least not, you know, electric performances here in the past several games.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be, right? Like, Michigan only rushed for 66 yards Saturday night on 34 carries. So it wasn't by a lack of, like, trying. They had trouble running the football. You know, Blake Corum only averaged 3.3 yards per carry. I think they had one play of 15 yards or high or longer. So, yeah, they lacked the explosiveness. J.J. McCarthy didn't look his sharp self. And to his credit, you know, he admitted afterwards, too. You know, when we spoke to Jim Harbaugh and the players – during the post-game press conference, well, everything was all great because they had won their third straight Big Ten championship. JJ kind of conceded like, hey, I didn't play my best. We have work to do on offense, to the point that Jim Harbaugh kind of talked him off the ledge, saying you played great. Like, you didn't make many mistakes. We had some uncharacteristically drop passes.
He said you didn't make any mistakes, which was like, what game were you watching, Jim? Because he 100% did make some mistakes. And
there were some drop balls, but there were, I think, some questionable decisions made by JJ, especially with some of the throws he made. And one in particular, maybe he should have picked up and ran for the first down as opposed to chucking it downfield. So, and this isn't, like you said, Andrew, this isn't the first week where we've seen, the offense struggle. It's been a few weeks now. Now, part of it maybe is on the offensive line. They're obviously playing without Zach Zinter. Drake Nugent played banged up and had to come out of the game at one point. So that offensive line, I think, is having an effect on Michigan's offense. I don't know what to degree, and obviously the Michigan coaching staff isn't going to tell us, but there's work to do. There's cleanup to be had. Luckily for them, they've got almost a month to do it. But I think that's the biggest like head scratcher, or maybe concern heading into the playoff, is just Michigan's kind of lackadaisical play. They look out of sync. They haven't been able to put together, yet somehow they were still able to score 26 points.
I will say this, the Iowa was, I was very impressed with their tackling ability. It's like there was a couple times where Michigan got a little bit into open space and just needed to make one guy miss, and they weren't able to do that because Iowa was able to make the tackle on the perimeter. And yeah, the Iowa front and running up the middle was tough sledding for Michigan all game, as they were really impressive kind of stuff in the box there with, and their DBs played well to not let anyone behind them. It's a very solid Iowa defense that, I mean, a lot of teams have said that all year, but you would have liked to see a little bit more explosiveness, a little bit more efficiency from this Michigan offense, especially because they forced so many quick Iowa drives and three and outs and forced three turnovers. I mean, two of their touchdowns came off of first and goal turnovers, or one was the special teams play, but like they had two drives that started first and goal. I mean, that you're going to probably come away with points on those possessions. So yeah, 215 or 213 yards of offense is not going to be good enough in the playoff. I'll say that.
Yeah. And you know, the defenses they faced obviously have something to do with that. You know, Ryan, you mentioned Iowa, you know, being very sound, fundamentally keeping things in front of them. Ohio State, you know, ranked, you know, right up there as well. So, I think that's a major factor. There are some other things that I think they showed that were real positives in this game. And, you know, James Turner, the kicker, continues to impress here. He's 4 for 4. He hits a 46 yarder, a 50 yarder. So he was maybe a little shaky early in the season. That might be too strong of a word, but you weren't sure, you know, if there was going to be a big drop off from Jake Moody. And really, so far, it hasn't been. Now, obviously, you saw what he did against Ohio State, clutch kicks, and now making them from deep as well. And if you want to stick with special teams, Samaj Morgan with a big return, you know, his first chance to do that this year, and almost scores a touchdown. So that aspect, you know, they always talked about the three phases of the game, and special teams at least seems to be playing better of late.
I think there was some hesitancy with James Turner early in the year from the Michigan coaching staff, right? They didn't want to force him or put him in situations where he would struggle. And I think that's one of the reasons why you didn't see them use him a ton. Now, obviously, the offense was also, you know, scoring at will and able, you know, more times than not when they got in the red zone, they'd punch it in for touchdowns, or at least on the other side of the field, they'd score touchdowns as opposed to field goals. But I think they've really been able to come to rely on him now in the back half of the year, especially these last final games. And I think it's going to matter. I mean, it, you know, every point is going to matter against Alabama. You know, Turner's been, he's been great the last, you know, really two or three handful of games. And it was the case against Saturday night. Kudos to him. He's really coming to his own. I know he doesn't say a ton. Jim Harbaugh had some good things to say about him this week, but he's really been key. And then, yeah, special teams, Samaj Morgan, I think he's kind of been the bright surprise this year. You know, we always talk about at the beginning of the year, which freshman's going to come through and who's going to be the breakout guy. And it certainly turned out to be Samaj. He's played well. I think he probably could have scored on that punt return touchdown. We haven't had a chance to talk to him since, but that was it was a good run. He probably could have turned it into 7, but nonetheless, it was an impressive play.
Hey, I talked to him afterwards. I got him. He said he ran out of gas a little bit there at the end. Some little some with his hamstring, I think he said, or groin or something like that. Just, But yeah, he's basically said he wasn't, as a young player, they had to build up that trust and that confidence to be able, to return punts. And he said he was out there. Yeah. The one before where he didn't get a chance to actually return it, but did on this one and had a good return.
Play of the game in Andrew's eyes was the Iowa player tracking back and pushing him out of bounds inside the 10 to save a touchdown.
It was. That was the most impressive play. I mean, in the end, obviously, they scored a touchdown anyway, Michigan. But yes, the guy who initially missed them came back and got him. That was amazing. He was my Iowa vote for MVP. Who the heck else were you going to go for? And obviously, at that point of the game, you knew they weren't winning. So the award was not going to him. Anything else from this game specifically that you think is worth discussing here before we move on?
I will say one more thing on James Turner. I mean, I was looking at his stats before the game, and it's like he's up to 16 of 18 now on field goals with a couple 50-yarders. I mean, that you can't ask for much better production than that. And yeah, based off the start of the year, you would never have guessed that he's been this solid this season. But I mean, that Michigan might need that moving forward. Like it paid off in the Ohio State game, and the Alabama game might be the same thing. So it's been an impressive run of kickers here for the Michigan program.
One note, the spring darling we were all talking about, Peyton O'Leary, got into the game and caught a pass. I think that was his first of the year. Am I wrong there?
No, I think he's had more.
Did he have the touchdown from Tuttle early in the Tuttle threw a touchdown?
Yeah, yes, he did. Yes, yep.
We saw him in a big moment. I know we talked a lot about him in the spring. Right. So
yeah, he has two catches now for 13 yards this season with the touchdown. So,
but yeah, another just sort of it's become old hat for Michigan to be, on that stage on the Indianapolis Lucas Oil Stadium field, with trophy in hand, they're celebrating as Big Ten champs third year in a row. This year, of course, a little more intrigue with Tony Petitti handing. Zach Zinner, the trophy. Harbaugh made sure that it was Zinner up there and not too much interaction between the Big Ten commissioner, who was heartily booed by the Michigan fans, and Harbaugh. All right, before we move on to the Rose Bowl matchup with Alabama, sort of halftime of the pod, you guys know, I didn't prepare you, but you guys know from past years, our listeners know, this is probably my favorite segment that we do on the podcast every year. It's when I make up bowl names, mix them in with real bowl names,
and
have you guys guess. Have you looked at the bowl list yet too closely? Getting a no from Aaron. Good.
I have not at all.
Good. That's what I want, of course. That's why I do it now. I could save it for closer to the game, but then you will have looked at things, so. So here we go. All right. Now, the rules are the bowl name has to be completely fabricated. For example, there's an All-State Sugar Bowl. I won't throw out Progressive Sugar Bowl to try to trick you or change the SRS Distribution Las Vegas Bowl to the, SRS Distribution Reno Bowl. Okay. So, that's kind of where we stand. So here we go. We could go Aaron, then Ryan, saying whether it's real or fake. The points bet, Atlantic City Bowl.
Fake. I don't know where they'd play a game in Atlantic City.
I'll say fake too.
Correct. Made up. The Papa John's Papa Bowl.
There used to be a Papa John's Bowl. So either they relocated or renamed it. So I'm going to say this is true.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be able to make that up. But I'm saying true as well.
That's fake. The Papa John's Papa Bowl is a menu item at Papa John's where they put the pizza in the bowl without any of the crust, but it's not a bowl game. The Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
That's real.
Yeah, that sounds very real.
Yeah, you're like, this is boring. Why'd I even throw that in? There's the bowl we went to last year, all right, out in Phoenix at the Arizona Diamondbacks field before we covered the Fiesta Bowl. So I was going to be very, very disappointed if you didn't get this one right. The Avocados from Mexico Cure Bowl.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
There's a Cure Bowl, so it used to be had different sponsors. So I'm going to say that's real.
That is real. That is correct.
I feel like I've seen an advertisement for that or something, or a billboard or something like that. It's a weird, weird bowl name, but I was confident in that one.
Santa Fe Frosty Bowl presented by Wendy's.
Fake.
Why would that seems like a weird spot for Wendy's to like frost it in Santa Fe?
Wendy's is based in Ohio, remember? So I don't know why. Yeah, you're right. I don't know why they do it in Santa Fe.
Right. Yeah, I'll say fake as well.
That is correct. It's fake. Should have put a little more thought into the location for that one, I guess. You're right. Fine. The Wasabi Fenway Bowl.
That's real.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Unless they change the sponsor names. I know there's a game at Fenway Park.
That is real. The Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
Yeah.
That's real.
I think you got us on that one last year.
I'm going to put that in every single year because, you know, right. I mean, I have Frosted Flakes multiple times a week. So I have to throw in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. Notre Dame's actually in that game. The whole announcement for it was kind of hilarious. They had helmets out on the table, but not Notre Dame's. So then they just had to start shouting Notre Dame. It was really comical. The Kansas City Bowl presented by the Eras Tour.
Fake.
Yeah, what, a bowl game in Kansas City? No.
There's a Taylor Swift reference he's getting at, and it's totally fake.
Oh. Right over my head.
It is fake. Yeah, that's the name of her tour. And yes, of course, Kansas City with the Chiefs and Travis Kelce. Okay. But yes, right over your head. So you get it that it's fake. The Open Doors NIL Marketplace Bowl.
No, but that'd be a good idea.
Yeah, I'm saying no as well.
That is fake. You guys are doing great. The Go Buck Naked Chicago Bowl presented by Duluth Trading Company.
No.
I mean, Chicago, huh? Would a bowl be in Chicago? Probably not, but I'll say it's real.
It's fake. It's fake. There is no Go Buck Naked Chicago Bowl presented by Duluth Trading Company. The Pop-Tarts Bowl.
Yes.
True.
I've seen someone's supposed to eat a real pop, or like a life-size Pop-Tart or something.
Yes, the mascot is edible. It's a Pop-Tart that the winning team apparently is going to eat. That is real. The Disney Plus Bundle Orlando Bowl.
No.
I don't think Disney, I mean, there's Disney stock is too low at these days, so I'm going to say no.
That is fake. Last one. The Miami Beach Coleman Inflatable Hot Tub Bowl.
Inflatable what?
Hot tub. Miami Beach Coleman Inflatable Hot Tub Bowl.
So there is a Miami Beach Bowl, or there used to be, because it used to have an affiliation with the MAC. So I'm assuming this is true, that they just changed sponsor names.
Yeah, I can see that. That'd be the where it would be located in. Yeah, I'll say true.
That one is made up. I have a Coleman Inflatable Hot Tub, so that's why I went with that.
That's a trick question, because is there still a Miami Beach Bowl?
See, I didn't think so. I tried to avoid those things. Yeah. If I screwed up on that, I'm sorry. But final tally, I think it was 11 firm. Was it 10? I think it was 11 to 9. Aaron won by one or two there, but there was only 13 or 14, I think. So you both did pretty well. You know, listeners, you can let us know how you guys did. But
that was a trick one. Miami Beach Bowl existed from 2014 to 2016, played at Marlins Park in Miami.
Well, I wasn't going back in time for every bowl ever created. Listen, there's none this year. Okay, that's all I was checking to make sure I wasn't switching a bowl this year. But
I want a mulligan.
Fair enough. Well, you know, Michigan is playing Alabama in the Rose Bowl. Presented by someone. I can't remember who that one is, actually, off the top of my head. It's one of the few where you could just say the Rose Bowl and people know what you're talking about. There's a few things to talk about here, but Aaron, I want to start with you because you were there in the room, yes, with Michigan as they got that announcement. And there's been a bit of a reaction to their reaction with kind of the assumption from some of the videos coming out, thinking that, I don't know, Michigan was disappointed or scared of Alabama. Since you were actually there, kind of what's, the takeaway from how the Wolverines, reacted to drawing Alabama in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, so they let us into the room for the first time. This is now obviously the third year where we've gone through this process where Michigan would, you know, won the Big Ten championship in Indianapolis. And then learn to their fate the next day. The previous 2 years, they didn't let us in. This year they did, which signaled to me that there was probably good news on the horizon. And sure enough, they got the number one seed. But you're right. I have read and seen stuff from people suggesting that maybe Michigan was unhappy with the draw. And I don't know if that's necessarily true. And I say that because of this. When the number one seed was announced, I thought the reaction from the players wasn't real great to begin with. So that signaled to me that either A, they're hungover from the night before, or B, they knew they were getting the number one seed anyway, so it wasn't that big of a shock to them. And then from there, the pairings were announced, and they settled with Alabama number four. But I would say the reaction to the draw of Alabama was about as equal, maybe a little less than them getting the number one seed. So to suggest that they weren't happy getting seeded with Alabama, I think would be a stretch, just based on how I saw them react to being number one. Like, it wasn't like they were jumping up and down and celebrating. Like look, Blake Corman, some of the players said afterwards, it didn't really matter what seed they were, whether they were one or four. And obviously that's the canned answer, and that's what they want to tell you. But I do think they seem motivated, and they realize that the last couple of years losing in the semis, looked bad, and I think they're destined to try and win this game. So I don't know. I think that was a lot was made out of that. I didn't take that away initially, and I saw some folks say that afterwards.
They started the selection show. The reporter who was in Ann Arbor led off the report by saying, yeah, these guys were up till 4:35 a.m. the night before celebrating their win. So obviously they're probably not as energized as they typically would be. And yeah, I mean, I think it was more just shock. I mean, I think many people were probably expecting Florida State to be in that spot. So it was initial like surprise, like, oh, wow, all right. But like, I don't think that was like, wow, oh no, we're facing Alabama. Like, I know Andrew's brother or friend, when we were driving, said that, oh, did you check that out? And we did. And I'm like, I didn't think anything was abnormal about it when I first watched it. I mean, it's like, oh, all right, we're playing Alabama. All right. Like, it's just an initial reaction. I didn't expect them to, the cackling and hooting and hollering, yeah, we get Alabama. Whoa. It's, yeah, I think that's been overblown a little bit too. I mean, but whatever.
Yeah, we were Ryan and I were driving back from Indianapolis. He had his phone on playing the ESPN feed of the announcement, and of course, kind of the internet cuts out like right as they're about to announce number four, and that coupled Ryan's literal shaking from excitement over who this fourth team would be nearly knocks me off the road.
Hard swerve back onto the highway.
I get back onto the highway. I hit the radio to get ESPN radio, and just in time to hear that the fourth team is in fact Alabama, which we could talk about a little bit here, since it kind of affects Michigan. I mean, I think personally it's wrong that Florida State should have been in this thing. You could debate whether Florida State's 13-0 is better or worse than Alabama's 12-1. I don't think just a 13-0 team just being undefeated has to be in. But yeah, using the injury to the quarterback, Jordan Travis is really unfortunate, because they still won their last couple of games without them. I just think about, like, if this was, think about, you're a Michigan fan, and it was JJ McCarthy and not Zach Zinner, who broke his leg there against Ohio State. They still win that game, and they beat Iowa, say, 12-0 instead. But the committee's like, we don't really like what we saw, and they get left out. That wouldn't seem right to me.
That's where I have an issue with the committee and how they operate. Because also, look, I listen in on the weekly college football playoff committee like teleconference, and they always preach about not projecting, because there's always hypotheticals thrown out there, scenarios and why teams are ranked ahead of others. And Boo Corrigan, the chair committee, always says we don't try and project. And yet here, after a key injury to a quarterback, and look, I get it. It probably makes, in this case, Florida State undesirable in a matchup perspective, because the assumption is if you throw Florida State in there with any of those three other teams, they're probably going to get walloped. And I would suggest, I would presume the Vegas line would suggest so as well. So I think here they're doing a bit of projecting, and I don't know. I think it's wrong in some regard, but at the same token, I get it. Like, you want to put the four best teams and create the four best matchups out there. They're trying to come up with who they think are the four best teams available. And I think they, I don't know, if I was in the room, if I had a vote, if I was on the committee, I would have probably done the same thing. You hate to see it. It's an unfortunate situation. And I think if anything, it was probably, a reminder or a confirmation as to why we do need an expanded playoff. And I think, 12 would have been ideal this year. I mean, that's not to say that would have been the case in previous years, but certainly, I think Florida State was certainly deserving, as was Georgia. There was a case to be made there too. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with Aaron there too. Like, it sucks for Florida State. Like, they did everything they could, and it's remarkable that they went 13-0. But the reality is, the committee is allowed to take into account the injury, and they did. And Alabama has won their last 11 games. And I've talked about this before. I think teams shouldn't be punished for playing a difficult non or out of conference schedule. So if they lost the game in the SEC before the SEC championship, maybe, but they decided to play Texas, another top opponent, and they lost. But they got better throughout the season. They had picked up several top 25 wins. They had the fifth-ranked strength of schedule, and they knocked off a team that had won two straight national championships in the SEC championship. So, yeah, there was a no-win situation for the committee, but I'm happy that it decided to put in Alabama, because I think that Alabama is the much better team, and they have a legitimate case to be in too. I could see in other years, yeah, maybe Blue Bloods maybe got in when they might have shouldn't, because they weren't as deserving. But this year, yeah, one loss early in the season to another team that made the playoff. I don't think they should have been punished that much, especially with how Florida State has played without their top quarterback in the last couple of years. It was a tough call, but I think the committee made the right call in the end.
Yeah, I mean, they had to play with their third stringer in the conference championship game, Florida State. The assumption is that the second stringer will be back for the playoff game. So, I'm not sure why we're just going off, how they looked necessarily in their last game.
Well, they also didn't look good with their second stringer. Florida should have won that game if they had a competent coach. And
yes, and Auburn should have beat Alabama the week before, right, too. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, and there was an Auburn team that had just got crushed by New Mexico State. So I don't know, because Alabama scored 20-something points in that game to sneak by. It's a little different than, a 13-6 game, for Florida State. Yeah. It seems like scoring more points helps, even if, your defense gives up more. I don't know. If we're just going based on the talent that these teams have or their coaches' track record, then yes, Georgia should be in. Probably Ohio State should be in, maybe instead of Washington. I don't know. We're just going by the point spreads. I mean, Washington was nearly a 10-point dog against Oregon and lost the game. So I don't know. Obviously, Georgia was favored to beat Alabama and didn't. So the idea of the NFL talent you have on your roster, or what the Vegas point spread would be for the matchups, confuses me a little bit. But that being said, I just think Florida State should have had the chance to show what they could have done. We don't know.
Well, they'll have a chance to play a very good Georgia team, and we'll see what happens there.
Absolutely. So yes, it does create, at least again, from a smaller point spread and the idea, the perception at least, that this will be a tougher matchup, for Michigan here in this Rose Bowl. Michigan gets the number one seed. What are kind of early thoughts on this matchup? Certainly, as you guys discussed, Alabama is an ascending team. They look to be playing better lately. Again, you did have that not great performance against Auburn, but, better overall, the last second half of the season than they were in the first.
Yeah, they've got a Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback. Jalen Milroe's in the competition right now. He's probably not going to win it, but he certainly had a better second half than he did first. He's put up some good numbers. The Alabama offense isn't anything great. I think they're basically around, middle of the pack. They're around 40th nationally in some of these major statistics. So they're not off the paper, jumping off the paper great, but they're good. But I think where this Alabama team is exceptional is defensively. They've got some great pass rushers. They've got a really good secondary that forces turnovers. So I think it's going to be a challenge for this Michigan offense. We'll dive into it here in the next few weeks. But Michigan, and we talked about earlier, but Michigan has some improvements to be made offensively. They're going to have to come out and play well, because it's Alabama team has been challenged. They've had good competition. And I don't know, the defense, I think, is going to be probably one of the best Michigan's gone up against, just from a high level talent perspective, and playmaking ability. Cause I think they got some dogs on that team. To the point that you know, players Michigan hasn't seen all season long.
Yeah, the first thing that stood out to me is a big mobile quarterback that can get out of the pocket and make plays with his legs. That could potentially be a challenge for Michigan, because we know they haven't faced many of those this year, and in the past when they have faced them, they haven't really fared very well. So that's going to be interesting to me. I think I've been impressed with Milroe here, and the little bit I've seen from him in the second half of the year. They don't have the wide receiver talent and the running back talent that we're accustomed to seeing Alabama having it in their championship years, but this is still a very good team. And I mean, it's a blue blood matchup. It's Saban versus Harbaugh. It's, I mean, number one all-time victories versus number two. It's SEC versus the Big Ten. I mean, I think you can't ask for much more out of a storyline matchup in the Rose Bowl between two blue bloods. I mean, I'm pumped about it. I think it's a great, interesting matchup, and it should be a great game as well.
Yeah. I and just getting back to how we started this Michigan Alabama conversation, as far as Michigan's reaction to the news, you know, Cornelius Johnson, you know, right after the game, the Michigan wide receiver, you know, said he was almost disappointed that Georgia, you know, had lost, because, you know, the thought of, all right, they're the two-time defending champs. We want to, you know, beat them, you know, on the way to winning it all. So, if you can't beat the defending champs, you know, the next best thing would be to beat the team that beat them. So, that'll be Michigan's, you know, goal here, in Pasadena, with the other matchup being, Texas and Washington on the other side of the bracket in the Sugar Bowl.
And don't forget too, that Michigan instituted a beat Georgia drill before the season started. So they were actively preparing to play Georgia. And sure enough, they're not. So I don't know if that you can apply some of that to Alabama. The players wouldn't really say yesterday when they're asked about it, but nonetheless, yeah, this Michigan team was, you know, just like they've been preparing to play Ohio State the previous couple of years. They were ready for Georgia, and sure enough, you know, the Bulldogs just aren't there in the Final Four.
I thought that was cheesy the second I heard it earlier in the year. It's like, you there's no guarantee. Why would you name a drill for an opponent that you probably will not play this year? Like the percentages were probably pretty low at the start of the year that they would probably most likely have to both make the national championship. And sure enough, yeah, here we are, and they named a drill for an opponent that they will not face in 2023. But
I don't think it's, if I'm recalling, like, the drill wasn't anything specific to, you know, anything Georgia run. So, hey, just call it the beat Bama drill. I like the idea of Harbaugh just subtly just saying, all right, you know, boys, line up, beat Bama drill. Be what? Oh, no, it's the same thing. Just you just renamed it. You know, you've got enough time here, several weeks leading up to the January 1st game. 5 p.m. Kickoff Eastern time, 2 p.m. Out there at the Rose Bowl. You know, and we'll be there with, you know, plenty of coverage of that game, and plenty more on this matchup on mlive.com/Wolverines. Thanks for listening.